Good Wednesday evening to you, world of Facebook. Thank you so much for tuning in, studying along with us for our midweek Bible study. All right, if I am hearing myself, then you are hearing me as well. That's what I needed to check. If you would do me a favor, I am getting ready to share this video. If you would also share it, I'm going to post it to the page for the Wood Church of Christ. That's where I am honored to be the pulpit minister, and I hope that you will share it as well. And then also grab your Bible, because we're going to be in Genesis, the 7th chapter tonight. Wednesday night Bible study. That will suffice. What we're going to do is we're going to keep studying Noah. I'm officially going to make sure that that is not ever going to talk to us while we are doing our lesson. And then I will just kind of leave that sitting down there out of the way. I'm glad that you're here. I hope that you've been having a good week. Been a faithful week. And if you haven't been faithful, I'd encourage you to take whatever in your life is stopping you from being faithful and remove it. And then draw ever so closer to our Lord. What we're doing as our Wednesday night Bible study, we're in the middle of a series, and if you're thinking, oh no, I've missed the first one, I will never be able to catch up. Luckily for you, they're all archived online. You can just go back on my page on the videos or on the page for the Wood Church of Christ, or I will post a link. If you go to my website, thejustinreedshow.com, click on programs, you can find the Wednesday night ones. They're archived. We would love for you to study if you happen to miss that. Also in the link above me, that's how you get to my website. Programs would be there on the left-hand column at the bottom of that column. But also the notes for this lesson and the PowerPoint presentation, which includes the two pictures we will show, are on the website. Would love to give you those. Put those in your hand. I don't charge for things like that because they're just notes. Come through studying multiple things. I'd love for you to have that. What we're doing is we're studying Noah. And as I began to discuss last week in our Wednesday night Bible study, I've had the privilege of teaching Noah a handful of times, a handful of different ways, and one way I did it was in a 3-night vacation Bible school. And the way I see it, the story of Noah is really just 3 chapters in the book of Genesis, 3-4 chapters in the book of Genesis, but to accurately get the story, you need to start at the beginning. And so that's what we did last week. And so when we do it in 3 lessons, that gives me enough time, I think, to scratch the surface and make you want to go back and study more. So what we did last week was we looked at Genesis 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, God creating the world, the wickedness when man fell away from God. And then we also talked about the appearance of Noah, the 10th from Adam, a very important man who walked with God, much like Enoch, except Enoch never died. We're going to learn in a couple of lessons that Noah will die. But here's where we're at. Noah was given specific instructions by the Lord God Almighty to build him an ark. And Noah did. In fact, that's how we end Genesis chapter 7 or Genesis chapter 6. Thus did Noah, according to all, underline all that God had commanded, so did he. And I've got that last 3 words underlined as well. So that kind of sets the pace, if you will. What we're going to study tonight is the actual flood and the salvation that occurs within that flood. This is part of the story that when we tell it to little kids or maybe sing books or read a Bible story book, maybe before we go to bed or you read it to someone before they go to bed, you'll remember the part where they're on the water, but we're going to look at it a little more detail. The notes here, we will just kind of do a running commentary and let the Bible speak for itself. So first and foremost, really 2 points, but I put 3 just because I'm used to things having 3. So the first one is, it is time to board the ark. And that's really the first 15 or so verses there of Genesis. Actually, about the first 10 verses of Genesis 7. Read with me. I'll be reading from the King James translation. And the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteousness before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take of thee by 7s, the male and the female, and of the beasts that are not clean by 2, the male and his female. So God has given instructions of how to build the ark. We looked at that in Genesis chapter 6, this massive floating boat that by God's design it floated. And now we see that God has given Noah the specific what to put in it besides his family. We'll get to that in a minute. He says, of every clean beast, wants you to take in by the sevens. Now, that's seven pairs. That's actually 14. Male and female. Well, Brother Justin, why not male and male? Or why not female and female, friends? That's not the way God designed it to work. And so the clean animals, you take in by sevens. Unclean, you just do male and female. You just need one pair. Why? Because they're going to have to procreate once they get off of the earth. They're going to have to replenish their species. Now, I've heard some people say, oh, but wait, Leviticus chapter 11 is where God says what is clean and what is unclean. And I'll say, you're right. And they'll say, but Noah didn't have Genesis 11, or Noah didn't have Leviticus 11. And I'll once again say, you're right. And they'll say, well, how does Noah know, according to God, what is clean and unclean? And my rebuttal is, you mean to tell me that if God's going to tell you how to build an ark, the wood, specific instructions, the size, everything down to the minute details, you mean he's not going to tell you what's clean and unclean? He used Moses to give that law when Moses was giving the law in Leviticus 11. I'm not going to read that, but you may just want to underline that or store it away in your memory or do something with it. But suffice it to say, there are actually four different classifications of animals. I just picked the first one there. But in Leviticus 11, 3 through 8, God says it is clean if it chews the cud and has a split hoof. Splits the hoof. Now, if it's unclean, it either chews the cud but does not have a split hoof, or does not chew the cud but has a split hoof. And believe me, there are specific, God gives his people specific, this counts, this doesn't, this counts, this doesn't. But I'm not teaching Leviticus 11 tonight, although that's a great study. I'm teaching Noah. So suffice it to say that God would have made sure that Noah was aware of what he wanted, because he's told him that already. Now look in verse 3. Of the fowls, also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep the seed alive upon the face of the earth. So he takes in the birds as well. For yet 7 days, or 1 week, God says, I'm going to cause it to rain. And it will rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Every living substance that I have made will I destroy off the face of the earth. God says, you've got 1 week to do this. Now, did Noah have to travel and literally grab all the animals? Did the animals somewhat come to him? I don't know. But God has given Noah specific instructions and said, Noah, I want these animals, two of every kind, male and female, clean ones, take them by the seven pairs so you can sacrifice them to me later. Now I want you to look at verse 5. And did Noah, according to all the Lord had commanded him, did and all, I have underlined, because boy, that's awful similar to chapter 6 and verse 22. Now this helps us, chapter 7 and verse 6, because the Bible tells us that Noah is 600 years old. When we're last really given an age on Noah, he's 500 when he has Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and then God gives him these instructions. So we're going to hold on to figure out how long he is. Let's get through these points through verse 10, and then we'll circle back around to that. Verse 7, Noah went in, his sons, his wife, his sons' wives and his sons with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. You have four different families on the ark. Mr. and Miss Noah, what's her name? I don't know. It's not recorded. Mr. and Miss Shem, what's her name? Don't know. It's not recorded. Mr. and Miss Ham, what's her name? I don't know. It's not recorded. Mr. and Miss Japheth, what's her name? I don't know. It's not recorded because it's not important to our story. Did each of those ladies have names? Yes. Do we know what they are? Not biblically speaking, we don't. People have speculated, but it's not important to our study. They board the ark, jump down there to the end of verse 9, as God had what? As God had commanded Noah. Look, and it came to pass after a week, after 7 days, the waters of the flood were upon the earth. Friends, God said it's going to rain in 7 days, and it rained in 7 days. Why? Because God keeps his word. Now here's something I want us to circle back around. When we're introduced to Noah having kids, he's 500, has Shem, has Ham, has Japheth. At 600 years old, Noah boards the ark. the only people that Noah saved, quote-unquote saved, by his preaching. The New Testament calls him a preacher righteous. Noah was preaching to that untoward, to that wicked generation for 100 years. And friends, by the world's standards, he only saved 8, including himself, only saved 8 souls out of the entire world. The world would call him a failure. But Justin Reed's going to tell you Noah's a successful man. Hear me out on this. Who does Noah save? Well, first off, Noah. First off, he makes sure he's on the ark. And then he makes sure his mate, his spouse, Mrs. Noah, she's on the ark. The Bible tells us Noah has 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And he makes sure those 3 are on the ark. And then he has 3 daughter-in-laws, Mrs. Shem, Mrs. Ham, Mrs. Japheth. And he also makes sure that they're on the ark. Friends, the world may call Noah a failure, but I'm going to call him a success. Because if nothing else, he was faithful to God. And he, by his righteous actions, by walking with God, by doing what God had commanded, saved his household. Oh, if we could just do that. Do I want to save the entire world? Yes. Am I on fire for the Lord? Yes. But friends, if when everything's said and done and the lines are all drawn and the T's are dotted and the I's are crossed, switch that. If all I did was help my family get to heaven, I've been a successful preacher. All right. Noah had to board the ark. Number 2, he is on the ark. Pick back up with me in Genesis chapter 7 and verse 11. Look, the Bible says the 600th year, that's important. The 600th year, 2nd month, 17th day of the month, that is the same day where all the waters of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. Literally, windows of heaven translates from floodgates. Okay, look at this. Noah, 600th year, 2nd month, 17th day. Now, when it says the waters came up, we're told in the first couple of chapters of Genesis there in the Garden of Eden that everything in the garden was watered by the mist of the earth, and that's how things had continued from what we can tell. And then we see the waters up, or the windows of heaven, or the floodgates. Water comes down. It meets in the middle. Why is there water up top? Go back and reread Genesis 1. God creates the world and water, and then he separates, and he calls it what? The firmament. The firmament above from the firmament below. And literally there was a panel of water up there over all the earth. God knew what he was doing. And so we see water comes from below. Water comes from the top. Meets in the middle. First time they've ever seen it rain. Now imagine this. Imagine you are Noah and you've been building a massive boat for 100 years. And you've been telling people you better make your life right because the Lord's going to make it rain. And they start laughing and they say, Noah, what's rain? They didn't know. When Noah said it's going to rain from the sky, they didn't know. Oh, but they would learn very quickly. The rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. We're familiar with that. That's a lot of water. That's a month and 10 days of solid water. Now, we kind of get a little nervous when it rains for about 3 or 4 days solid, that big, heavy rain. We start to get nervous about that. Of course, 40 appears frequently in the Bible. 40 days, Jesus and Elijah and Moses fasted. 40 years, the Israelites wandered in the wilderness. 40 days, the prophet Ezekiel laid on his right side to symbolically bear the iniquity, the sins of Judah. 40 years did Saul, David, Solomon, each 3 reign. In 40 days did Goliath taunt the Israelites before David slew him. 40 is a frequently appearing Bible number. 40 days and 40 nights of rain. Can you imagine it? Now, here's a little tidbit in the life of Justin Reed. My mood is generally just a little bit better if it's sunny. Now, I'm thankful for the rain, and I know there are times when we need rain, and I count that as a blessing from God and a free car wash. But me, I'd rather not rain, at least maybe not rain while I have to drive around town and run errands or do whatever. And it rains 2 or 3 days in a row, and I'm trying to figure out which shoes are not waterlogged that I can go out and wear. Can you imagine raining for 40 days and 40 nights? Continual rain for a month and 10 days. Well, the Bible tells us, in the self same day entered Shem, Ham, Japheth, Noah's sons, and their female companions, their wives. 8 souls entered to the ark. when Peter uses the analogy of the ark and equates it to baptism, he says, yet 8 souls enter the ark, the like figure of baptism doth now also save us. Now let me ask you a question. You're an intelligent person because you found this video, you've shared it, you're studying along with me. There are more than 7.5 billion with a B people on the earth. I did not do a quick Google search to get the exact number because I've always wondered how close are they on that. But suffice it to say, there's over 7.5 billion with a B people. I've had people ask me a question, maybe you have wondered it. Well, just exactly, how many people died in the flood, Brother Justin? What is the answer? I'm going to tell you the biblical answer. When I was doing research for this, I read into this for probably an hour, hour and a half, and I followed one guy's article, and he had math and chart, and he had all this stuff going on. He theorized that there might have been trillions of people on the earth. I don't know. You ready to know how many people died in the flood? This is the biblical answer, and you can take it to the bank. You ready? How many people died in the flood? All but 8. Now you're thinking, well, of course, yeah, all but 8. What does that mean? That means if there were 9 people, and I know it was a lot more than 9, if there were 9, all but 8 died. If there were 9 million people, all but 8. 9 billion people, all but 8. You see where I'm going? It doesn't matter how many people there are. What matters is how many people are on the ark. There were only 8 souls that heeded the call of Noah. The easiest, most biblically accurate answer is all but 8. We move on. Animals also entered, everyone after his or her kind. Look at verse 16. They that went in the male and the female of all flesh. Watch this. And God had commanded him. You see this theme. 6:22. Thus did Noah. According to all God had commanded him. 7:5. Noah did all. Genesis 7 and verse 16. Noah did all. I like Noah. Noah did all that God had commanded him. But I also want you to note the important part here. God shuts the door. It's not man. Man didn't have the final say. Well, you know, max capacity is 8. No. I tell you what. A boat that size could have held more than 8 people. Mathematically speaking. But God shuts the door. I'm reminded of what Jesus Christ tells. He tells a parable over there about Matthew 24, Matthew 25, the parable of the 10 virgins. 5 wise, 5 foolish. 10 could have gone in, but 5 weren't prepared when the time come, and then the doors were shut, and guess what? They couldn't come in. That's an analogy for people when Christ is coming back. If they are not inside, if we're not in the ark, you're lost. We keep going, friends. The waters prevailed, verse 18. They were increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark went upon the face of the waters. Look at verse 19. The waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills were under the whole heaven. They were covered. Why? 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. Let's do some math. First off, verse 19. I have read quote-unquote biblical scholars who thought they knew a whole lot about what God's Word said, but I'm not really sure if they'd read it a whole lot, but that's neither here nor there. And they said, well, the flood happened, but it was a localized flood, and it only flooded in one or two areas, but it wasn't the whole world yet. The Bible tells me upon the earth, all the high hills, everything under the heaven was covered. 15 cubits upward. Does that, okay, 5 cubits, 1.5 feet, 18 inches measured on the male from the tip of the elbow, full extended to the tip of the middle finger. Common used measurement still today. They put studs a cubit apart, but they don't call it a cubit. They just say every 18 inches. It's still the same when you build a house. So that's 1.5 times 15. You get 22 feet. 22 and a half feet. Does that mean there's 22 and a half feet of water? No. Go back and look. Upward, covered all the high hills. That means that it was 22 some odd feet higher than the highest mountain. Now today, the highest mountain, I've looked it up for you, is Mount Everest. You probably knew that. Mount Everest, last time they measured it, 29,000 28 feet or 29,029 feet. Nobody can agree. I like 29,29. 29,029 feet. That is a lot. A couple of miles up in the air. So that means if Everest was the tallest mountain pre-flood, we would have had 29,000 and either 50 feet or 51 feet. That is a lot of water, especially if you're in like New Orleans area where it's already below sea level. Let's do some more math here because I think this is fun. 1 gallon of pure water weighs roughly 8 pounds, 8.345 pounds. You know that. You go to Walmart, you buy a gallon of water, and you know you pick up 8 pounds. Well, a cube, that 3 should be up, but I guess my computer didn't recognize that. A cubic foot of water, or all three sides, is a little over 62, almost 62 and a half pounds. All right? You start doing the math, you're talking about millions of pounds of pressure on the Earth. Why are we looking at this? Well, this comes prevalent in our next slide, but suffice it to say that if you were not on the ark, verse 21 tells us that, then you perish. Verse 22, and all whose nostrils were not it did not have the breath of life, they died. They died. Now that's kind of sad, but mankind had a chance to get on the boat. All right, verse 24, the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. I want you to think about, for just a minute, we have time, how destructive the power of a flood can be. You may remember, and it's hard to believe now, a decade ago, 10 years ago this month, this very month, I remember what I was doing and where I was when it started raining on the 1st of May and into the 2nd of May, and we have what we still call the Nashville flood that changed the city of Nashville forever. You may have worked in Nashville, or you may have been in Nashville not too long after and seen the Opry House or Opry Mills or anything in that part of town, downtown, absolutely flooded. Friends, a decade later, they are still trying to recover in some parts from this flooding, let alone everything else that's happened in March, April, and May this year. I tell you what, though, you think there's millions of pounds of water when the entire world is covered with a flood. I'm going to tell you that's might be when the Grand Canyon was formed. Because if you go there, they'll tell you that it was caused by a continual water flow over a period. Now, they'll say millions of years, but I can make their math work out for millions of years within the time frame of the flood if you have that much water moving at once. But you may say, well, Brother Justin, that's all fine and dandy, but I don't live in Nashville, and I don't live at the Grand Canyon. All right, here in Warren County, where I reside, which may not be too far from you, depending on where you are, I'd encourage you, they're not paying for this advertisement, I'd encourage you to go to Cumberland Caverns. Been there I don't know how many times. My wife and I, our first date was to Cumberland Caverns. Been numerous times. It's got a great history in my family. My grandfather was a tour guide there in the 60s. When you walk into Cumberland Caverns, which is in Warren County, middle of nowhere, literally, Tennessee, if you look on a map, not being rude, but follow the equation here. You look up and there are seashells embedded in the ceiling of Cumberland Caverns. Do you know how far away we are from an ocean? Have you ever driven to the beach? How did that happen? Well, it'd be real easy when the world's covered with a flood. You go down to Cathedral Caverns, which is about 30 minutes west of Huntsville, Alabama. My wife and I went there this past September. We loved it. We will probably go back. It's a short cave, but a beautiful cave. And you're walking along. It's in Alabama. It's still a good ways from any beach. And you're walking along, and about eye level, halfway across the chasm, there are dried sea sponges. And there's seashells, and they have shark's teeth in the roof of their cavern, and the tour guide will shine a light, and I think there's 11 of them, and they'll show you where most of them are. How did that happen? The flood. One more example, and I'm glad you're watching, because the only place you're going to see this next picture is in this PowerPoint, because I took it. I've been to the American Museum of Natural History twice in my life, one of my favorite museums of all time in New York City. It's an okay city, but it's a good city. I did enjoy my time there for radio conferences. So I had to go because I love museums. If you've ever seen the Night at the Museum movie franchise, it's based off of being at this museum. Well, when you're in this museum, they're renowned for many things. They have a great hall of dinosaurs. Now, I took this picture, and I hope you can see what this is. This is a slab of bones. Now, in real scale, the screen I'm projecting on is roughly 4 by 2 feet, because I measured it right before we went on. About twice this size was that slab you're seeing, and it's about a foot thick. And the plaque there said something to the effect of, all these dinosaur bones happen when some massive flood pushed all the dinosaurs on top of each other. This lab, kind of in the middle of an exhibit, but it's not the main attraction because a T-Rex is right next to it. That's scientific evidence that backs up the Bible. Not that I needed it, but to me, I thought that was cool. There are examples here in our own little area of things that happen directly related to the flood. But our story continues, and I love the way chapter 8, verse 1 of Genesis begins. And God remembered Noah and every little thing, all the cattle that was with him on the ark. God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters, well, they're just kind of hanging out there, right? And then verse 2, the Bible says, the fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven, it finally stopped raining. It did not rain on Noah forever, but the rain was restrained. And look at this. The ark rested on the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. Second month, 17th day, is when Noah got on. He's been on the ark already for 5 months. And it's now resting on Mount Ararat. Of course, it's not done yet. I promise you that one. But watch this. Where is Ararat? Hold on the next slide. I've got some more on that. I threw that little bullet point in there before I meant to. Verse 5, the waters continue to decrease until the 10th month. So that's 3 more months past the 7th month. Almost a year. That's 3/4 of a year. The tops of the mountains are starting to be seen. So it came to pass at the end of 40 days, after he can see the tops of the ark, or tops of the mountains, I should add, Noah opens a window which he had made. He opens the window. And he starts to send some birds out. Now here's the thing I find interesting. One of the two things I find interesting that blows my mind about the ark. One is that this is the first time the Bible tells me and the Bible tells you that the window has been opened on the ark. I know it has a window. We read about that in chapter 6. It's a cubit squared. It's 18 inches squared. I know it's there. But this is the first time we read of it being opened. Here's also something interesting. I don't read of God speaking to Noah until the end of our lesson text today, Genesis 8, verse 15. And we'll get there in a minute, and it's really more for our next week's lesson. But nonetheless, Noah's going to be on this boat, and I don't want to tell you how long yet because that's on a slide, but he's been on this boat the whole time, and he waits almost 10 months before he opens the door, really 11 months till he opens the door or the window, and then we see God start talking to him to the very end. Imagine the faith that Noah had to still rely upon God. Now, I mentioned Armenia. You may know I'm a coin collector. Here in the U.S., we issue what we call the Silver Eagle. It's a 1 ounce silver coin. They've been doing them since 1986. They're highly collected and traded all over the world. Canada has the 1 ounce maple leaf. The Libertad is for Mexico. Most of your countries will issue silver bullion or bullion. It's a way to collect and also to, in a way, invest. I have one of these in my collection, but I decided to borrow an image and show you. This is from Armenia. This is an Armenian 1 ounce silver coin. It's not meant to be used in public trading, but it's meant for collectors. You can buy them off of reputable sources online. I don't read Armenian at the top, but look here at the bottom. Noah's Ark. Look here, they've got a dove with an olive branch, and they have the ark with mountains and the sunshine. Armenia, that's where most people think Ararat is, and they claim they found settlements of it. I don't know if it's actually Armenia or not, but to tie in the world of coin collecting, I like the fact that Armenia puts Noah's Ark there on their silver coinage. All right, let's keep going. Like I said, just type in Noah's Ark coin on Google, Armenian silver, and you can find it very easily, and they're not too terribly expensive if you just want one to show people. So Noah opens the door, and he sends out a raven, goes to and fro. And then he sends out a dove as well to see what happens. And verse 9, the dove returns, no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returns. And he brings her back in, right? Verse 10, he waits 7 days. I don't know why I put 10. He waits 7 days there. And then he sends forth the dove. And look what happens this time. This time, the dove, as was shown on that coin, the dove brings back an olive branch, which means the water's receding enough that your tallest branches of the olive tree could be seen. So he waits another week, and he sends her forth. And here's the interesting thing. This time he sends her forth, and she doesn't come back. Because this tells Noah that this dove has found adequate lodging. I also find it interesting that the Bible calls it's a female dove. Specific, tell us that. No rest for the sole of her foot. So Noah, verse 13, we're almost done with our lesson, I promise you. It came to pass, watch this, on the 601st year, first month, the waters had dried up. And verse 14, on the second month and the 27th day of the month, was the earth dried. Remember how I told you when we were in chapter 7 to remember how old Noah was and when he went on the ark, the 600th year of Noah's life, the second month, and the 10th day. Now Noah is 601 years old, second month, and the 27th day the earth is dried up. And so then the question becomes, well, how long were they on the ark? They were on the ark for 370 days. 601, second month, 10 days. Or 17th day, excuse me. To 601, second month, 27th. 370 days. A biblical year is often defined in the Bible as 360. For us today, 1 year is 365 and a quarter day. That's why every 4 years like this year, we have a leap year. How long is Noah on the ark? Friends, Noah is on the ark for a year. One whole year. And as we're going to study in our lesson, if the Lord permits us next week, the same world that he left is not waiting on him when he gets off the ark. Let's quickly do number three. Just to sum up, of course, God speaks to Noah, "Go forth, you, your wife, your sons, and your son wives, and bring with you everything. And so Noah went, be fruitful and multiply." So Noah leaves, and Noah takes everybody off the ark. Noah's told to leave, takes the animals. You may want to underscore the word ark in Genesis 8:19, because that's the last reference we actually have of the ark. You think about it. You remember Noah and the ark. But how many other times do people go back to see the ark? They don't. I've often wondered if they didn't dismantle part of the ark and use it to build their houses. I don't know. That's just me speculating. But what happened when they got off the ark? Well, that's next week's lesson, if the good Lord permits. It's quickly. I've got 8 lessons you can learn. They're not long. Number 1, God will not contend with sin forever. He's not in the quote-unquote sin-tolerating business. He never has been. He never will be. That's God. God will not contend with sin forever. Number 2, the judgment day is coming. Friends, the judgment day was coming for the generation that Noah lived in, and they didn't think so. And look what happened to them. Friends, our judgment day is coming as well. Hebrews 9:27-28. Number 3, I love number 3. God keeps his promises always. Number 4, you better believe, friends, that we serve a powerful God. Number 5, the quote-unquote ark is never too small for one more. Really, had somebody repented, which what they would have had to do, turn from the error of their ways and obey what Noah was saying by proclaiming God's message, they could have come on the ark. Just like today, the church is never full. The church is never at max capacity. Now, buildings may be, fire code and whatnot, but the Lord's church, never too small for one more person. Number 6, we must develop distinctiveness. What do I mean? Noah was distinct. Noah didn't look, didn't act, didn't think, didn't feel, didn't behave like the rest of his world. And God rewards him for it. In fact, God uses him for his ultimate plan of saving man. Number 7, we must trust God completely. You want to talk about a man trusting God completely? I'll show you Noah, and we'll sit down and do the math and see how he was on the ark for a year. And I don't read, as I was mentioning, I don't read of God speaking to Noah. He may have, but the Bible doesn't tell it until after. That's a man who trusts God. And lastly, I love this one. The Lord remembers and the Lord protects. Genesis 8, verse 1. And God remembered Noah. So that's Noah, part 2. Flood and salvation. Next week, if the good Lord wills, we will study Noah, thanks and promises, leaving off the ark. You'll probably get to watch me get mad just a little bit. Let me quickly encourage you, if you will join us again tomorrow night, 6:30, having a lot of fun. A lot of good work is going on with this series with my father-in-law, Bill Boyd. We'll do that 6:30, same time here on my channel, also on the Wood Church Christ Facebook page. And if you wouldn't mind, join us tomorrow night. We're studying through Matthew. We're in Matthew chapter 17. And I know I've greatly benefited from being a part of this study, and I hope that you will as well. I will now leave you with the words of Numbers chapter 6, as I have every lesson in this series. May the good Lord bless you. May He keep you. Please continue to pray, and thank you for watching this video.